So while he's doing that, we'll do a little review, and then we'll have a prayer, and then we'll begin. So what's chapter 12 about? There are basically three characters in chapter 12. Somebody tell me.
The woman, the child, and the dragon.
The woman, the child, and the dragon, okay? The woman we described as the faithful of God. The child is Christ. And the dragon is clearly defined in verse 9 as the devil. Right. So you have the woman, the child, and the dragon in the first six verses. Then in verses 7 through 12, you have war in heaven where Satan and his forces are fighting against God and his forces. And of course, Satan is defeated because he's not strong enough, and he's cast out along with his angels. And then in verses 13 through 17, you have the persecution, because the Satan, if you remember, Satan, the dragon, we'll call him the dragon, was ready to devour the child as soon as it was born, but God carried the child up into heaven, protected the child. Satan wasn't happy about that. So then you had the battle in heaven where Satan and his forces and God and his forces, and Satan was cast out again. That didn't make him very happy either. So he turns his attention to the woman, which would have been God's faithful, and God carries her away to safety. So by this time he's so angry that he turns his attention to the individual saints, which at this point is called followers of Christ, which means this would have been the church. It would have been me and you. It would have been Christians. So as we come to chapter 13, which we started last week, Satan uses tools, we'll call them tools, to help accomplish his goal of persecuting the saints. So we have the beast of the sea, and we have the beast of the earth, and we talked about the beast of the sea last week. Those are allies of Satan. They're enemies of the church. So in this vision, some translations say Satan is standing on the seashore. Some say John is standing on the seashore. But there's this terrible beast that rises up out of the sea. And what did we say the sea was? Humanity, right? Society. So this beast rises up out of the sea, and it has seven heads, and it has 10 horns, and it has crowns on its head. And one head is different. What's wrong with the other head? One head. Yeah, it's like it had a death blow, but it recovered. And we talked about that some last week. So he looked like a leopard, but he had the feet of a bear, and he had the mouth of a lion. And his power came from who? From the great dragon, from Satan. Satan gave him power, right? And gave him a throne and put him in authority. So what did we say this beast represents? Anybody remember? The Roman Empire, the persecuting authority of the day, which would have been the Roman Empire. And particularly the emperor, I think, which at this time, if we're talking about 96 AD, was who? Domitian. Right. Okay. So let's go ahead and have a word of prayer. David, would you lead us in prayer?
Our Father in heaven, as we study your word, we try to make application to it, to what we can understand. We understand that you are in charge. Satan is fighting a losing battle, and if we follow Satan, we lose. Help us to understand that you are in charge of everything and to apply everything we can to be faithful in your sight. In Jesus' name pray. Amen.
Amen. So Here's this, Satan's furious. Here's this beast of the sea. He rises up to power. Satan uses him to accomplish his purposes. And he gives him power. And he's very strong. He's very powerful. And all the world marveled at this beast. Oh, how great he is. Who could ever defeat this beast? He's invincible. And so he spoke great blasphemies against God and against the saints in heaven. And we talked about that. And we went back to Daniel chapter 7, which says that the ruler of the fourth empire, the ruler of the fourth empire is who? The Roman Empire, right? Would speak pompous words against the Most High. Well, that's what we see taking place here in Revelation. And we know through secular history, though Domitian called himself Supreme Lord and God. And he wanted everybody to worship him, and that's what we'll talk about with the second beast, okay? But he made war with the saints because he wanted to eliminate Christianity. And because they would not bow down and worship him. They would not recognize him as Supreme Lord and God. So he was given authority over every tribe, every tongue, every nation. And verse 8 of chapter 13 says, all who dwell on the earth shall worship him whose names have not been written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. So everybody that were not Christians, who were not followers of Christ, worshiped this beast. But his role was for a limited period of time. And we've talked about that more than once. A time, times and a half time, 42 months, 1260 days, being a limited period of time. Daniel chapter 7 talks about that. We talked about that in Revelation chapter 11. We're talking about that in chapter 12, that this is for a limited period of time. And during this limited period of time, the gospel was going forth. The saints were being persecuted so badly because Satan was trying so hard to destroy the church. He couldn't destroy Christ. He's trying very hard to destroy the church. Is he still trying to destroy the church today? Yeah. Absolutely. And he'll try to destroy us, okay? He'll try to destroy us as individuals. He'll try to destroy us as a congregation of God's people. But he says in verse 9 and 10 of chapter 12, or chapter 13, I'm sorry, if anyone has an ear, let him hear. What do we say that meant?
Pay attention.
Pay attention. Listen to what I'm saying. He who leads into captivity, which would be Rome, shall go into captivity. He who kills with the sword must be killed with the sword. In other words, Rome's going to fall. We go back to Matthew 26, which says that those who live by the sword will perish by the sword. In Galatians chapter 6 and verse 7, says that we'll reap what we sow. Okay, the time's coming when Rome is going to reap what they sow. So we take up with verse 11 in chapter 13. And there's another beast. And this beast is a beast from the earth. So John sees this beast arise. This beast gets his authority from the first beast. So if the first beast is a tool of Satan, and he gets his authority from the first beast, then he's what? He's a tool of Satan too, right? So he gets his authority from the first beast, and his mission, verses 12 through 15, is to enforce the worship of the first beast. We'll talk about that. Now he has two horns, and his horns are like the horns of a lamb. In other words, he doesn't look fierce. He looks like he's got lamb's horns. You know, he's so humble, whatever. But when he speaks, His speak is the voice of the dragon. In other words, his lamb horns are deceiving. And so he exercised the authority of the first beast. And I know we haven't been reading a lot of this text. We've got a lot to go through. So he exercised the authority of the first beast and caused everyone to fall down and worship the beast and to worship the dragon. And it says he performed great signs. He caused fire to come down from heaven. And he performed all these signs and these wonders, and he deceived the whole world into making an image of the first beast and to worship him. So you think of the Roman Empire, and you think of the size of the Roman Empire, okay? Domitian is in Rome. So if you're going to make these people worship Domitian, you got to give them something that they can see to worship him. So they made these idols. And it says that he gave the idols a voice. Now remember, we're in a vision here, okay? How he made fire come down from heaven, don't worry about that. This is a vision. Anything is possible in a vision. He didn't literally give this idol a voice where he spoke, I don't think. But he gave these idols the appearance of reality. Does that make sense? So these people were worshiping this beast, these idols of these beasts. It says small and great, rich and poor, free and enslaved. They receive the mark of the beast, and those who do not have the mark are going to be persecuted. They can't sell in the marketplace. They can't buy in the marketplace unless they have the sign of this beast on their forehead, on their hands, literal. Like I said, we're in a vision here, okay? So go back to the opening of the first four seals in chapter 6. We have the white horse, which we said was Christ, going out conquering and to conquer. The second seal was a red horse. And the red horse was going out to make war. Then the third seal was the black horse. And the black horse, if you remember, had a set of scales, which represented famine and weighing the food, the grain, whatever. And we read and we studied where grain was going for exorbitant prices. And then we have the pale horse, pale in the fact that he was sickly. And death in Hades was riding this pale horse. Now tie that to what we're studying now. The first 11 chapters were dealing with our battle on earth, right? Satan and Christians on earth. In chapters 12 through 20, we're dealing with the bigger picture, we've talked about that, of the battle between God and Satan, which is driving the things that happen on the earth. So you think about what's going on here, okay? Christ is going forth to conquer. Christians are being persecuted. They can't buy in the marketplace. They can't sell in the marketplace. So they're going to have to buy food on a black market or whatever, which is going to be exorbitantly expensive. So some of them might starve to death for their stand for Christ. So when we get into these chapters, to me, when I look at these chapters, I go back and I see a bigger picture of these horses and the riders in chapter 6 at the opening of the seals. Do you see that? Does that make sense? So here these Christians are, they're being persecuted. They're being hunted down and killed. They can't hold down a good job. They can't sell their fruit and their vegetables or their meat or whatever in the marketplace. They can't go to the marketplace and buy. Well, let's give that some application. We go to the grocery store, okay? And we don't have our identification. What are we told? You can't shop here. So if I can't buy groceries, what am I going to do? I can't steal. That'd be a sin. So you see, and you know, if I go to my job and I don't bow down to that idol when I go into work, then I'm probably not going to have a job. And not only am I not going to have a job, I might be carried off by the second beast and his cohorts and never see my family again and be killed. So when we study Revelation, we go back and think about Hebrews, think about Romans, think about Galatians, think about the draw of going back to the old law. Because if I go back to the old law, then all this goes away. Right? So the temptation is going to be, well, you know, in my heart, I love God and I serve God. It's not going to hurt me to bow down to this idol before I go so my family can eat, okay? That'd be a temptation, wouldn't it? That'd be a great temptation. So to have the faith that in the midst of this persecution, would that be discouraging? Knowing I can't feed my family? Absolutely. You know, we get discouraged. Elders get discouraged, okay? Congregation gets discouraged. As a matter of fact, and maybe I'm wrong, but I seem to feel since our meeting ended that I feel some discouragement coming on. Don't be discouraged. I tell you, and we'll talk about where we are when Bob gets back to the congregation, I think, but just know the elders are trying hard and diligently to find another evangelist, okay? So just don't be discouraged. Be encouraged. When you think about what these Christians were going through, do we really have anything to be discouraged about? So what we need to do is we need to be encouraged, and we need to encourage others. And we need to learn from this that these people were going through terrible, terrible persecution, and they were dying for their faith. And so we ask ourselves the question, if we were in that position, how strong is our faith? Would we give our lives to die for our faith? It's a question I hope we never have to answer. But this is what they were going through. So this is the reason that Revelation was written, to encourage these Christians. It's going to get better. It's not permanent. If you remain faithful to the end, even though you give your life, you win. Just be diligent, endure, and overcome. And you'll be fine. So just keep that in mind as we study this. So, the number 666 was the mark of the beast. Now, people have taken that everywhere, right? Oh, this guy's phone number is the last four digits are 6666, or the middle three digits are 666. He's cursed. No. Remember, this is a vision, right? The number is 666, which is the mark of the beast. And like I said, remember, this is a vision. In a vision, things are bigger than life, right? Now, there are commentators that go back and give all these reasons of why you calculate this number to be 666. We're not going to do that. We're not going to go back and do any of those. What we need to get from this is, regardless of what this mark was, it was a means of identifying those who worshiped the beast. Now remember, at this point, you've either got the mark of the beast or you got the stamp of God. Remember, the angel held back the judgment until 144,000 were marked. Next chapter, we're going to run across those 144,000 again. So the number 6 falls short of the number 7. So if you want to get some meaning out of this, number 7 is a complete number, right? Number 6 falls short of that. So it's incomplete. And so some would say that it suggests failure. So 666 would be failure, failure, failure. And he says it's a number of a man, not the number of God. Can man win against God? They're always going to fail, right? So failure. So the first beast is the persecuting force of the day. The second beast is the enforcer of the emperor worship. And if you don't worship the emperor, you're not going to eat, you're not going to sell, and you're probably going to be killed for your faith. And these are both tools of Satan that are used to persecute the offspring of the woman. So I know I sent this chapter 13 out last night. Maybe some of you answered the questions or not, but it's pretty simple. Questions on chapter 13. Who did John see rising out of the sea? The great beast, the first beast, right? And he is described as having 7 heads and 10 horns and crowns on his head and a blasphemous name on his heads. Now, we don't know what that blasphemous name was, but when you have a ruler, whether it's Rome or whether it's whoever it is, that puts himself in the place of God, and a government that stands in opposition to God, they blaspheme God. If I'm going to put that I am supreme Lord and God, that's blasphemy, isn't it? So we can pretty much understand what that blasphemous name was. So how is he described? What did he look like? Leopard with bear's feet and a lion's mouth. In other words, he was pretty terrible. He could tear and devour and destroy. And what was given to him by the devil?
Power and deceit.
Power and a throne and authority. And the dragon gave it to him. What was the reaction of the world to that which came out of the sea?
Wow.
That's pretty good, Jerry. I don't know how I could have put it any better. Wow. You know, yeah. look at this beast. Who's like this beast? Yeah. So, who did, according to verse 4, did the world worship? Okay, there's the beast. They're worshiping the beast. But who were they worshiping? Worshiping the dragon, right? That's what verse 4 says. Now, according to verse 5, which was that which came out of the sea given? This is the blasphemy. He was given a great things to blaspheme and authority to continue for 32 months. And what did he do with it? He blasphemed God, his name, his tabernacle, and those who dwell in heaven. So what in verse 7 is granted to that to this beast that came out of the sea to make war with the saints and to overcome them? Okay, so it seems like, okay, he's having some success here. He's killing saints. He's persecuting saints. He's having some success. And, you know, if you're living during that period of time, you know, God's going to take care of you, but he might not take care and judge this beast, Rome, until after you've been killed. But if you've been killed and you're faithful, where are you at? You're with God in heaven, right? So he's taking care of them. So, 9, according to verse 8, who would worship that which came out of the sea? All who dwell on the earth. And what will happen to one who leads into captivity? They're going to go into captivity, right? And what happens to one that kills by the sword? He'll be killed by the sword. So then John sees coming out of the earth this second beast. And how's he described? Like a lamb. It didn't sound like a lamb, did he? He had the voice of the dragon. So two horns like a lamb, the voice of the beast, the voice of the dragon. So what, number 12, what does that which comes up out of the earth do according to verse 12, 13, and 14? Well, verse 12, he exercised the authority of the first beast and causes those that dwell on the earth to worship the first beast. 13, he performed these great signs. He's got fire coming out of heaven. He's doing all these wonderful things. He's deceiving the people. And 14, he deceives the whole world, and he makes them worship the image of the first beast.
I think that is the results of the image of the lamb's horns.
Okay. Deception. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. He looked innocent.
All for the deception.
Yep.
You get the results of the beast.
You're right. You're right. He looked innocent. But he wasn't. Yeah, good point. Good point. So, 13, according to verse 15, what was granted to that which came up out of the earth? Well, he gave life to the image and authority to kill those who would not worship. And what does this beast cause? Well, that's the mark of the beast, right? Either on their right hand, their forehead, whatever, 666. And according to verse 14, who could not buy and sell?
Those who did not have the number.
Yeah, if you had the number of the beast, you could buy and sell. But if you didn't have the number of the beast, you were in bad shape. And what was the number of the beast again? 666. Yeah. Okay. Anything from anybody on chapter 13 before we go on?
An organization that's been identified with persecuting the saints and enforcing the emperor worship in Asia is mentioned in Acts chapter 19. They were called Asiarchs. The New King James Version says some of the officials of Asia who were his friend, that is Paul's friends, sent him pleading that he would not venture into the theater, but these Asiarchs later on, at least by the time of Revelation, it seemed like they were enforcing the emperor worship, and so that's a good possibility of who that's referring to.
It is a good possibility, and if you read the commentators, they say it's maybe the Concilia, which was located in Asia Minor, which might have been why the seven churches of Asia are the ones written to, but whether it's the Concilia or the ones in Acts, whatever, they were the enforcers of the emperor worship. You know, if the emperor said, you're going to worship me, but he didn't have anybody making sure you did, and I'm going to kill you if you don't, then how many people would have worshiped the emperor? Not many. They might have been in awe of him, but so, yes, good point. So, we come to chapter 14. And I think the key verse to chapter 14 is verse 13. Then I heard a voice from heaven saying to me, write, blessed are the dead who die in the Lord from now on. Yes, says the Spirit, that they may rest from their labors and their works follow them. So the first five verses, you've got the Lamb, and then you got these 144,000 again, okay? And then in verses 6 through 13, you have four angels who deliver four messages from heaven. And then in verses 14 through 20, I guess you could say that's harvest time. That's the reaping that, with the sickle, okay? So let's read these first five verses. And I looked, and behold, a Lamb standing on Mount Zion, and with him 144,000 having his Father's name written on their foreheads. And I heard a voice from heaven like the voice of many waters, and like the voice of loud thunder. And I heard the sound of harpists playing their harps, and they sang a new song before the throne, before the four living creatures and the elders. And no one could learn that song except the 144,000 who were redeemed from the earth. These are the ones who were not defiled with women, for they are virgins. These are the ones who follow the Lamb wherever he goes. These were redeemed from among men, being first fruits of God and to the Lamb. And in their mouth was found no guile, for they are without fault before the throne of God. So John looks, and he sees this Lamb. This Lamb would be who? Christ, right, Christ. And he's standing on Mount Zion, and with him are these 144,000 who were redeemed from the earth. Now, when we think about Mount Zion, okay, Jerusalem was first called Mount Zion, the city of David, right? 2 Samuel chapter 5, 1 Chronicles. And in Psalm chapter 48, it's Mount Zion is called the great city of the king, or the city of the great king. But then when you come to Psalms chapter 20 and Psalm chapter 48 and Psalm chapter 125 and Isaiah chapter 14, Mount Zion is listed as a place of refuge, a place of security. But here, we're talking about Mount Zion being what? Where's God? Where's Christ? He's in heaven, right? So now these 144,000 that were marked on the earth, they're with Christ in heaven. Remember, the martyred saints were under the altar crying, how long, O Lord, until you exact vengeance on these people? And they were given white robes and said, wait a while until these others that are still to be martyred join you. Well, these 144,000 are now in heaven. They're with the Lamb. They're safe. They're victorious. And so Christ is standing with this faithful saints of the spiritual Jerusalem who have been sealed. Now, I call it spiritual Jerusalem because that's what Hebrews calls Mount Zion. And he's with these 144,000, and we said before, this is not a literal number. Because these are 144,000, and they're all men, apparently, because it says that they were not defiled with women. Well, if that's so, if that's a literal number, and that's all that's going to be in heaven, then women not going to be there, you know? And there's not 144,001 that's going to be there. So you can't take that literal. But a lot of people do. Jehovah's Witness, whatever. Okay? So, in contrast to those who have the mark of the beast, these have the mark of the Father's name on their forehead. And John heard this voice from heaven. And what did this voice sound like? It was loud, like a waterfall, like loud thunder. And he heard harps playing, and these 144,000 were singing a song of victory. And nobody else could know this song except these 144,000. Why? Because this is a song of what? Of victory, right? And people that are on the earth, they can't sing this song. They don't know this song because they're not what?
Not redeemed yet.
They're not redeemed. They're not victorious, right? This is a song of victory that these 144,000 were singing. So this is a song of victory. It's a song of celebration. When we have a song of victory, when we have a song of celebration, what have we done? We've overcome, right? So this 144,000 are those who have overcome. Look at what it says. They are those who are undefiled. Now, I know it says with women. They have not defiled themselves in offering worship to the idols. They follow the Lamb wherever he goes. In other words, they're faithful to the end. They are the redeemed from among men. They are the first fruits to God and the Lamb. In their mouth is no deceit. They haven't fallen down and worshiped the beast. They haven't denied the Lord. They have not been deceived. They have not deceived themselves. It says they are without fault before the throne of God. And again, this 144,000 is no more literal than any of the other things in these visions that we've seen. Again, it's a vision. Anything's possible. So James P. Miller, that I don't think that commentary is even available anymore. But he said, let the 144,000 represent the faithful in Christ who as Christians made the supreme sacrifice by serving the Lamb with all their souls, and let the passage rest with this. It's pretty clear. So Christ is standing on Mount Zion. He is standing with the faithful saints who have overcome. They're singing a new song of victory. They're victorious. They're celebrating. They've won the battle. They've endured the hardship. They have won the battle. So as we get to verse 6, there are four messages that are given from heaven. Now, these messages announce the victory of the Lamb and his children over the forces of evil that have been set before them. Now, the first three are attributed to the proclamation of angels. The fourth is a voice from heaven. Now, could that have been another angel? Possible so. But we're about a minute before the bell rings, so I don't think we're going to go into that, and we'll go into that next Wednesday night. So you have these four angels, these three angels, and a voice from heaven, and they're proclaiming victory, and then and judgment, basically. And then you have the reaping of earth's harvest and the reaping of the grapes of wrath. And some people would say, some commentators would say that that's all one thing. I don't believe so, and we'll talk about that. So chapters 12 through 14, we have war, and we've just discussed that section. War between God and Satan, the two beasts, and the victory and the judgment. In chapters 15 and 16, we're going to have the seven bowls of wrath that are poured out on the earth in judgment. And then in chapters 17 and 18, we have the fall of the great harlot, who is named as Babylon. But it's not really Babylon, it's Rome. All right, so if the harlot falls, then we're talking about the fall of Rome. Then in chapters 19 through 21, we're talking about victory. The victory that this entire book has been leading to since the beginning in chapter 1. Victory over the harlot, victory over the beast, victory over Satan, the ultimate victory being in heaven. And then in chapter 22, we have the picture of the New Jerusalem. And then we have warnings about the book. So that's where we're going from where we are now. Thank you for your attention. The bell's going to ring, and we'll continue with that next Wednesday night.